This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
That was hard to watch. Chris Graham here on Street Knowledge, and we're going to break down, we'll talk about the second round loss to Florida, and we'll also talk about the 2016-2017 season for UVA in this podcast. And for a lot of folks out there,
sort of wrap your interest in the UVA sports year. Baseball is, of course, just getting started. The Cavs are in their second weekend series in ACC play. But for a lot of folks, if you pay any attention to baseball, it's not until the latter stages in May and then into June with the NCAA tournament. So, and if not a lot of, not as many folks anyway, pay as much attention to college baseball as they certainly do with football and basketball. So we'll actually kind of talk some football too, just getting ready for spring practice and then the 2017 season there too. So a little bit of everything here in this podcast. But first, we'll talk the basketball game. We, you know, if you were honest with yourself going into tonight, and I was trying to be, you knew this was going to be tough. Florida is you know, this, it's not a great Florida team. It's a good Florida team. It's not a great, it's not the Florida teams of the mid-2000s when Billy Donovan was winning national championships. But Mike White has this team playing well, and they played great in the SEC this year. Beat Kentucky once, finished second in regular season, got upset in the conference tournament early. But you know, we know that's not the biggest issue in the world. Losing in the conference tournament doesn't really mean anything. Virginia going in shorthanded, and you don't want to make excuses. And Tony Bennett didn't make excuses. It is a reality that the Cavs were shorthanded. They didn't have Isaiah Wilkins available tonight. But Isaiah Wilkins not being available wasn't the issue. Virginia scored 39 points in this loss. That was the issue. Isaiah Wilkins doesn't account for, you know, more than maybe 8-10 points in a game. So the issue was Virginia couldn't shoot. And that was an issue in some key games for, you know, the last month or so of the season. I wrote a column after the Duke loss, which would have been back around Valentine's Day, where I said maybe this UVA team has reached its ceiling. In fact, I didn't say maybe. I declared that they had reached the ceiling. And that was after, you know, just a, that was only the second loss of a four-game losing streak. Cavs had just lost that previous Sunday in double overtime at Virginia Tech, and then they lose to Duke, a game that the final score was 64-54. This was after, too, you got to think, you know, remembering back, there was that just that narrow, frustrating loss to Villanova where the Cavs led by double digits most of the way, and Villanova rallied in the last 6 minutes to take a win on a buzzer-beating tip-in. There was another buzzer-beating tip-in in that Virginia Tech game. I referenced the loss in double overtime that extended that game and allowed the Hokies to win that game in double OT down in Blacksburg. And then the loss to Duke, and it was only a 10-point loss, and it was a 4-point game at the last media timeout, and Jason Tatum had a career night, went 6-7 from 3-point range. And then I write this column saying this Virginia team maybe has reached its limit. And I remember getting some nasty comments on Twitter from folks and even looking at the message boards from other websites about that impression I had. But the impression I had was actually one that I hate to say, unfortunately, was probably valid. That, you know, in that game, and in those, you know, I should reference the Syracuse loss up in the Carrier Dome too. The Cavs, obviously, and we saw this play out the last couple weeks, had issues with offensive flow, and we know why. You know, you can talk about the loss of Malcolm Brogdon all you want. It was really the loss of Anthony Gill in the middle, and then the loss of Austin Nichols, the guy who was supposed to replace Gill. He only played one game for us. Nichols, we all remember the much ballyhooed transfer from Memphis. He was an all AAC player there. He was a former top 25 national recruit coming out of high school. Five-star recruit. You know, we didn't get a lot of those. We don't get a lot of those guys. And, of course, he redshirted for a season, so he practiced with the team. He knew the system inside and out, right? And he plays one game and gets banished from the kingdom. And at that moment, Virginia lost any presence in the inside. And that's, you know, that's not to denigrate Isaiah Wilkins, who was an all-ACC defensive selection again. not to denigrate Jack Salt, had 8 points and 10 rebounds tonight. Jack Salt had sort of a career game. He had 10 points in a game earlier this season, but boy, on a big stage, he's 4 or 5 from the floor. He had the 10 rebounds again. I think that's a career high. I didn't check that one out, but I'm pretty sure that's a career high for him. Mamadi Diakite, a freshman, gets the start tonight and has 9 points and 6 rebounds. Actually, a game high for Virginia, 9 points. And he had 6 rebounds. You know, the post guys did it tonight, but by and large this season, I mean, you don't have anybody. You know, when you had Gill for 3 seasons, you had a guy that shot 60%+ from the floor. And of course, Diakite also shot 60% from the floor, but in a different way. Gill was a guy that you could rely on even when he wasn't scoring in the post. Opposing defenses had to account for him. Because he could score with his back to the basket. He could face up guys and drive around them, you know, inside that little 10 to 12 foot area. If he faced up after getting a post pass and kind of turned around, and, you know, he could make a quick dribble drive from that post area. He could score with either hand in the post. He, you know, certainly could finish. He could shoot free throws. I mean, he just was a quintessential college post player. And Nichols promised to bring the same kind of thing. His numbers were very similar at Memphis as to what Gill was able to do in his last 2.5 seasons in Charlottesville. You know, 13 points a game, 61% from the floor, averaged 8 or 9 rebounds a game, blocked shots. And then we only had him for one game. Wilkins is a guy who, as great a defensive player as he is, his best contributions offensively are to get offensive rebounds, maybe get a stick back out of them, maybe kick it back out. And hit a pick-and-pop jump shot. He's not really even a guy like Gill could, you know, drive around his guy either with either hand inside that little post area. Wilkins still hasn't as a third-year player now, still hasn't shown that ability. Salt's a guy that if he catches it, and that's a question, if he catches it, he can actually finish around the rim. But, you know, he's not a guy with great back-to-the-basket skills and can't even pick-and-pop 50% or less at the foul line. Diakite has the most upside, and we saw glimmers of that tonight. But, you know, most of this season, you know, didn't get the minutes and the reps, you know, needed. He'll be a guy in the future. He seems like he's got some ability around the rim. He's got to fill out a little bit more, and he can hit that pick and pop shot. And he's got a lot of athleticism. But again, he's got to, you know, kind of grow into that. Jared Reuter is probably the best guy in the post in terms of ability to score back to the basket, but he's also a little short for that, you know, a little slight. He's 6'7", about 220, and, you know, just not quite strong enough to overpower, you know, power five post guys, and doesn't get a lot of minutes as a result. So, and there's some guys in the future. Jay Huff might contribute, you know, if you saw him this year. On the end of the bench, you can see why he redshirted this year. He's 6'11", and they list him probably at 215. But if he's 190, you know, that's what he came in at. He's probably still closer to that. Got to get a little stronger. He's very athletic, and we'll see what he can contribute in the future too. But, yeah, this year's team just didn't have that ability to score in the post. You just couldn't rely on dumping the ball in the post like you could for the last 3 years to a guy like Gill. And what that does for opposing defenses is, hey, they can basically just say, hey, beat us with jump shots. And that's what Virginia had to do this year and did for the most part this year. You know, shot 46% from the field as a team, shot 39.4% from three-point range, both good numbers. You know, and those numbers had gone down because as opposing defenses, you know, sort of figured that out, opposing coaches figured that out, they made Virginia beat them that way. And Virginia countered well. You know, the win over Wilmington went 5 guard for long stretches of that game, and you kind of threw away the mover blocker offense, at least for the second half of the win on Thursday. Spread the floor and let Parentes and Mariel Shayok get in the lane a little bit and create some opportunities for themselves and for their teammates, and things worked well in that game. But that wasn't going to work tonight. We kind of knew that. Against a Florida team that, you know, Virginia was first in the country in adjusted defensive efficiency according to KenPom.com. Well, Florida was fourth and does it differently than Virginia with size and athleticism. You know, that's a reason that Diakite started the game for Virginia. They were Coach Tony Bennett was trying to counter the size of Florida. Their front line goes 6'8", 6'9", 6'11", the starting guys. So Virginia couldn't afford to go four guard. At least that was the thought going into the game. And for a stretch there, up and gosh, for a long stretch of the first half, you know, this game was a blowout, but 3 minutes, three thirteen to go in the first half. Apologies for the sniffles. Got a little bit of a cold. Not quite as bad as Isaiah probably, but 3:13 to go was still a 19-17 game. Ugly game, but still a 2-point game. And Florida closes the first half on a 12-0 run to go up 14 at the break. You kind of knew then the way things were going offensively for Virginia. The Cavs were 8 of 27 from the floor. That they probably weren't going to turn that around. It just seemed like, you know, guys were kind of still figuring out what to do. It wasn't just missing shots. There were some air balls being thrown up there. Jump shots weren't even close. Florida came out in the second half, 9-0 run in the first 2:12. So it was eventually a 21-0 run, 40-17 lead. Virginia at the 17:48 mark. Tony Bennett calls timeout. Virginia didn't get to 40. They ended up with 39 points. So the game was effectively over at that stage. The frustrating thing for fans, I'm sure, is that it feels like, wow, you know, this team scores 39 points. You look at Twitter, you see the hashtag UVA or UVA versus FLA, and you see a lot of Cavs fans saying they're embarrassed. And I'm embarrassed that so many Virginia fans, so-called Virginia fans, are saying that they were embarrassed. This team played over its head to get to this stage, a finishing record of 23-11. Obviously preseason expectations were high. I think the AP poll had a seventh in the preseason poll. That was when it was expected that Austin Nichols, who again was a first-team All-AAC selection before he transferred, and he was a highly coveted transfer. It was expected he would take the role of Gill, and then, you know, the season's different, and not apologizing for that at all, but the season is different if he plays the full season. Lots of teams lose guys and have to recover and that kind of thing. So, you know, that is what it is. But the reality of this team was that, yeah, they were, you know, playing without a post presence. We still won a lot of games without a post presence. Beat North Carolina. North Carolina could very well, you know, be a Final Four team again this year. Beat Carolina and held them to 43 points in a game. This Carolina team that averaged 87, they beat them 53-43 in Charlottesville a couple weeks ago. Villanova, who got bounced today in the tournament too, but they were the number one overall national seed, had to win on a tip-in at the buzzer after being down 12 in the second half to Virginia. Virginia really dominated that game for the longest stretch. Virginia won, five games in on the road in the ACC. You know, and they tied for the league lead in that department. That's pretty good, right? That's a pretty good margin there. The Cavs did suffer some losses at home this year for the first time in a while. A tough loss to a West Virginia team that's in the Sweet 16. That game was a tie game with a minute 30 to go, and West Virginia won that game back in December. Again, that's West Virginia team still playing. They lost a game to Florida State. Florida State had Dwayne Bacon go off in the second half, 10 of 13, and still had to get a Bacon three-pointer with 2.2 seconds to go to win by two. Florida State lost today. They're done. Lost at home to Duke. Duke is still very much alive in this tournament, and Vegas has them as the favorite in this tournament. And Duke had Virginia, the final margin was 10, but it was a tight game in the last couple of minutes. I'm trying to think the other – there was another loss at home, I thought. Miami got bounced today and didn't play well today. That was a game that I think was the beginning of the long illness of Isaiah Wilkins. And, you know, the news tonight was that Wilkins is going to go back home. And when he gets back home to Charlottesville, he's going to have some blood work done because you have to start worrying now. I mean, this is real life stuff now. This isn't about, oh, wow, my favorite basketball team embarrassed me, and now I have to live on Twitter with the shame of my team losing. This is a young man who's been sick for more than 3 weeks now, has lost a significant amount of weight. Now, it was nice seeing him on the sidelines tonight, early in the game, smiling with teammates. He didn't play in the game and there was no thought he was going to play in the game. But he's going to have blood work done. I mean, this is like, you know, when you're sick for this long, you have to start wondering. And hopefully, because we've been calling it a strep throat virus, really limiting his availability. That the loss to Miami was February 20th. Sometime that week, whether it was before that game or after that game, he developed the strep throat. February 20th, a while ago now. Where this is what, March 19th or March 18th? I guess it's March 19th as I'm recording the podcast now. So, yeah, that's a long time to be sick. And we have to hope that Wilkins will obviously recover from this and it's not something more serious. But, you know, so tonight's game goes the way it goes. You know, Florida strangled Virginia. The way Virginia has strangled a lot of teams. We were on the other side of this just a couple weeks ago, beating Pitt 67-42 in a game that they were never in, and you know they couldn't score. And Virginia's had a lot of these kind of games over the last few years, and tonight we were on the wrong side of it. And you know, maybe we'll appreciate next year when we do this to more teams, because this will happen more often than not with Virginia being the team in control. But we'll remember what it felt like and maybe be a little more appreciative of the effort that goes into it. Sorry, I had to take a drink there. My throat's sore, too. So the season ends, and it's a depressing end. But again, if you're being honest with yourself, you knew going into this game it was going to be an uphill battle. I know that the Vegas oddsmakers had it a two-point game. All the win probability programs you see out there had it a 50-50 game and all that kind of thing. But this Florida team came in about as healthy as they could. I know they lost a guy a couple weeks ago, but they still had some depth. And Virginia coming in without Wilkins was going to be a big issue. It is what it is. You lose a game, you know, life goes on. This Virginia team had pretty much played to its potential. This particular Virginia team. And now let's think about the future of this team, and that's sort of what I'm hoping a lot of folks can focus on, those who are embarrassed by their team. If you're still going to be fans, or if you're going to start rooting for somebody else, because you can just do that. I can't do that. I'm you know, one of those who is for life, I guess, a graduate who has been following UVA basketball, particularly since I was 5 years old. That's not going to change just because my team embarrassed me and I had to be embarrassed on Twitter about it. The future of this team, you got to say, is bright. Only one senior on this team, and that would have been Leonard Perantes. And you hated, you know, for him seeing the season and thus his career end the way it did. But he started for four seasons, and as of right now, the most celebrated four seasons in Virginia history, four straight NCAA tournament appearances, two regular season ACC championships, one ACC tournament championship, two number one national seeds, a number two national seeds, seed. They won an NCAA tournament game each of his four seasons. What would the record have been then? 3-2, 6-3, 7-4 in the NCAA tournament in his career. Virginia would have won an ACC tournament game, obviously, in every one of those years too, because they would have been 3-0, 1-1, 2-1. That's 6-2, 7-3 in the ACC. So 14-7 in tournament games. Wow, that's it for a point guard. That tells you that that London had an accomplished career. You hated seeing him on the bench tonight in tears at the realization that it's all over and the way that it ended. But he's the only senior. You know, you bring everybody else back, literally. You know, you've got two very heralded recruits, freshmen in Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome, that now this is their team from a guard standpoint. But I say that you still have Darius Thompson and Devin Hall back in the backcourt. You still have Mario Shayak back. Those five guys, those are five of your top six guards. They're all back next year. They'll be back and stronger and better, especially the freshmen. And that's the biggest determinant of this, of next year's team success, is going to be what Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome do between now and October to get better, to get stronger, you know, you got to think, guy comes in this season and he put up some games this year. Now, tonight finishes with nothing. So did Jerome. But he also had 20 in the ACC tournament win over Pitt last week. Had some big games down the stretch for the Cavs. More consistency is going to obviously be a key for him, but also just getting stronger, you're not going to grow taller, obviously, but you know, getting stronger, getting faster, developing a game. You know, right now Kyle is a guy that is limited. If you can take away his jump shooting ability, you're not going to respect anything else he can do, because he's not going to drive past you, and you don't have to respect that part of his game. But when he develops some dribble drive capabilities, and you have to worry about when he catches the ball off the screen, that he's either going to pull up and shoot to three, or pump fake and drive past you. Once that happens, he's going to be a next level kind of guy. And Ty Jerome, you know, you have to remember, he missed his senior season of high school because of hip surgery. And you know, he couldn't have been at 100% this year. And if any issue you would say he had this year, now that you think about the fact that, you know, he had hip surgery last year, if you think about, you know, the one knock on him would have been his lateral movement. It seemed like he was kind of guy, he's not a catch and shoot kind of guy. He's not a guy who runs off screens and does a lot with stuff. And certainly his defensive lateral movement was a question. Well, that's a guy, you know, you talk about a kid with hip issues, you know, next 6 months to get stronger in that respect. And he still gained a year of valuable experience this year. So, you know, he had some games this year where he really carried the team. You know, the Villanova game, he had a stretch where he carried the team in the second half of that game. I think it was the Notre Dame game, had a big game against Notre Dame on the road. It's a kid that he's got a lot to build on too. And then you bring back guys who will be seniors next year in the form of Shayok and Hall and Thompson. And it's going to be, you know, backcourt's going to be pretty solid. You know, the question mark again will be front court. You've got the aforementioned Salt, Reuter, and Diakite. You know, the work that Jack Salt needs to do is he needs to, you know, he's a third-year player. He's a sophomore eligibility. He redshirted a year in the program. I wonder if we've seen the ceiling of him, but, you know, if he can develop, he's the biggest guy on the team, 6'11", about 250. He's a very solid young man physically, and it seems emotionally too. He just seems like a rock kind of guy, doesn't really let emotions get to him, it seems. Foul-prone a bit, needs to work on that. And if he can develop, you know, any kind of offensive game to go with his hustle and his defense and his rebounding, you know, he'll be a kind of guy, kind of, you know, a Yuri Barnes type from back in the 90s, perhaps. Jared Reuter, you know, I think he's the best right now, at least back to the basket scorer on the team. If he can just get a little stronger and maybe get better defensively, get better lateral movement, out of his, torso, he can be a guy who can earn some more minutes. I think Diakite needs to get stronger. He's the guy that seems to me that could be the guy that is the star of this group, and he could be a special player. And we saw glimpses of that tonight. Jay Huff, don't really know a lot about him in terms of his development this year, because obviously he didn't see him on the court as a redshirt, but we got to hope that he can be a kind of guy that can step up next year too. And DeAndre Hunter, another guy redshirted this year, 6'7" guy that can add some athleticism on the wing. And so, you know, I think the future's bright, to be honest with you. When you get everybody but one guy from a team that won 23 games coming back, and you have to presume they'll all get better, they're all going to be a year more experienced in the program, etc., it's got to be good. And so, you know, those of you who are embarrassed to be associated with the program can just move on, as far as I'm concerned. Those of us who are looking forward to that future, it stings a little bit to lose the game tonight this way, but I think this team played way above its head to win 23 games, 12 in the ACC, 11 regular season, 1 in the tournament, and be in the mix the way they were. again, you know, the loss tonight and the loss to Carolina down on Chapel Hill were two blowout losses. The other nine losses, well, I guess the loss to Notre Dame was not quite the blowout loss that these were, but that was also a pretty substantial loss, 13 points, and Cavs were really not in that game at all. But, you know, you lose to Villanova by two on a tip-in. You lose a double overtime game to Tech. You lose an overtime game to Miami. The Duke game was a 10-point game, but it was a close game at the end. Syracuse had to rally and win by four. What else are we looking at there? Again, I mentioned the West Virginia and Florida State games. You know, this was a team that was in a lot of games, and so I think that they'll just be better next year as far as that goes. A year older, a year wiser, and, you know, other teams are, you know, other programs are losing a lot of guys too, and so the Cavs will be, you know, a top three or four team in the ACC next year, and who knows, they might grow into by January and February, they'll be a very dangerous team. I think I'd be very surprised if they're not. So, you know, perspective, people. That's all I'd say. Perspective. Perspective about this kind of stuff. 351 teams throw it up in November. 350 of them lose their last game. One team wins the last game. Virginia won't be that team again this year. There's worse things in life to deal with. Football. Getting ready for spring practice. It's, you know, it's a different beast than where our basketball program is. Coach Mendenhall and his staff trying to plug some holes with some transfers, graduate transfer route particularly, you know, trying to add some depth, offensive line depth, quarterback rotation depth. It'll be interesting this spring, you know. I think, you know, we didn't realize how deep the hole was that he was inheriting. I mean, obviously, Coach Mike London had gotten fired, and his staff got fired for a reason. But, boy, last year was a eye-opening experience in a negative way. So don't expect a lot of news out of football spring practice this year that's going to be anything more than blowing smoke up people's asses. This is a rebuilding job, and next year the schedule is again, for the most part, easier. You mean you still got to play your ACC schedule, but, you know, they can sneak four or five wins out next year. That'll be building towards the future. There's a lot of work needs to be done there, though, and, you know, Scott German, who's going to probably listen to this podcast, I'm sure, he and I say this a lot when we drive back and forth to UVA games. Bronco Mendenhall didn't forget how to coach when he flew from Provo to Charlottesville. So it's going to take some time, but you got to think that he and his staff are going to get this moving right direction. It's just, you know, football's a different beast than basketball. And it took Tony Bennett. My math's right. Tony just finished his eighth season at Virginia. It wasn't until season three that they made their first tournament. And that team got bounced out by Florida, actually, if you recall that, in a equally demoralizing loss, if you remember that too. That was a team that, you know, had a great start, kind of fizzled down a stretch, got a 10 seed in the tournament, and lost by 26 to Florida in that first round game back in 2012. The next season, that team also faded down the stretch, didn't get a tournament bid, should have gotten a tournament bid, but didn't get a tournament bid. And played in the NIT, and then since then, you know, so five of his last six teams have made the tournament. The last four have won at least one tournament game, and but it took him a while. It took him till year three. And basketball, again, I was saying, is a different beast. There's 13 scholarships. You only put five guys on the floor at one time. Your rotation is 8, 9, 10 guys at most. Football, you know, we talk about the rebuilding job in football. So in basketball, you know, you can get a couple recruits, stockpile for a couple years, and by, you know, year three or four, you better be winning games. Football, you got 85 scholarships. You're two deep of starters just on offense and defense. It's 44 guys, right? 44 guys in your team. I mean, it's just doing math, 44 guys. That includes specialists, your kickoff guy, your place kicker, your punter. You want some athletes on special teams that maybe aren't part of your two deep, but maybe, you know, you gunners and stuff like that. So you need at least 60 guys out of those 85 to be productive. And it takes some time to get those guys. I mean, and they can't just, can't all be freshmen. You can't all be freshmen and sophomores. And they've got to play the way you want them to play. So it's going to take a little bit of time. It's, and plus, in Mendenhall's defense, and I was a guy that was not defending him a lot. Now I am. But in Mendenhall's defense, his recruiting class last year wasn't his recruiting class. You get hired in December and you have signing day in February. You're signing, for the most part, the guy who got fired recruited to your program. And we saw this year a number of those guys through attrition are no longer part of the program. I'm saying that in using sort of official terminology, through attrition. They were asked not to come back or whatever the case may be. But, so really the group he brought in this year is really his first full class, to say the least. He brought in some graduate transfers last year, Kurt Binkard, the quarterback, as an example of that. But this is his first full class. And, I'll use some Al Groh terminology here, going back to our 15-year-plus run of failure in football. But Al used to always say, you can't judge the cook until you let him go to the grocery store a few times. So Bronco hasn't been in the grocery store but once. He deserves a couple more shots at it before we, get too harsh with him. And really, I think I've said this before about football, but the ACC scheduled Virginia to open the season on Labor Day night against Georgia in 2020. So next year's 2017. That's year two of the Bronco era. Year three is 2018. Year four is 2019. We better have a good year four, because I'm not saying good like in terms of competing for a national championship. You just want to have 7 or 8 wins that year, because the ACC doesn't want to stick a bad team in that season opening game on Labor Day night and showcase game. They're expecting Virginia by that start of year five to be back. And that's sort of the clock ticking kind of symbol for Bronco and his group. They got to get this thing right by then, or the ACC is going to have a big egg on his face, right? Putting Virginia in that game. So got to think that the ACC powers that be aren't dumb. They're not going to schedule Virginia if they don't think that things will be back in some way by that point. But that's a ways off. I mean, this is only 2017. There'll be a lot of bad football between now and then, Virginia fans, but that's life. I'll talk quickly about baseball. I know if you're still hanging with me here, I mentioned earlier in the podcast, we still keep up with baseball. Baseball is my first love. And in fact, my attention is kind of two areas at this stage of a season, college sports season, because in the fall, actually in the fall, it's kind of goes in two directions too. In the fall, the last couple of falls, I've been the radio play-by-play voice of VMI football, Virginia Military Institute. Been the radio play-by-play guy for them the last 2 years. And so, I focus on UVA football, obviously from a coverage standpoint, for Augusta Free Press, but then also, spend home Saturdays at least. We only do the home games for VMI on the radio. At least I do. Wade Branner, who's my baseball partner in the spring, he does the radio on the road. At home games, he's the ESPN3 play-by-play guy. So I take his radio job, standing on top of the press box, literally on top of the press box. For the radio, for football. Then baseball season comes, and I join Wade in the booth for a series of ESPN3 games. We'll do 10 this year, and that starts sometime early. I think it's like April 13th or 14th. Last year we did a series of sort of one-off games. We would do Sunday games or Tuesday or Wednesday games. We didn't. It was just sort of here and there. This year, the schedule actually has us doing three games weekend series, which will be fun. For me, it'll be great to do. Because baseball's played this way. College baseball's played, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and there's 1 week we do Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But still, the idea being, you have your Friday starter, your Saturday starter, your Sunday starter, And we'll bring you all three games, and we're doing one midweek game. So 1 week, we actually do four games. We're doing a Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I think it is, because that's the last week of the regular season. And so, but for the purposes, a lot of you folks listening still at this stage in a podcast, and thank you for doing so, EVA baseball. We do a lot of EVA baseball coverage. Scott German and I will get over to Davenport a few times. We've already done so a few times early in the season. And now that basketball's over, we'll kind of devote, you know, a lot more attention to UVA baseball. And the program, starting off, wow, it's, you know, with the toughest possible ACC schedule you can imagine. On the road the first two weekends, at North Carolina, at Clemson, two top 10 teams. Carolina took two or three last weekend. As of right now, the Cavs and Tigers have split two with the rubber match tomorrow. I think a 1 o'clock start down at Clemson. Adam Haseley will go for the Cavs. But those are the only three losses the Cavs have suffered this season. I think the record, that would leave us at 14-3 right now. And today losing 7-6 to Clemson. Down 6-0 in the first inning. Cavs chipped away. Left a potential tying run on base in the ninth inning. So, you know, great comeback after being down 6-0 in the first inning. Senior starting pitcher Evan Sperling knocked out in the first inning, and you know, hang around. Kind of a victory and defeat, if you want to say. But this Cavs team's going to be pretty good this year. A lineup that can produce some good starting pitching in general. Good depth in pitching is, you know, this will be another good Cavs team. I'm not sure what the ceiling is for this team quite yet. Still early to determine that, but you know, I like what I'm seeing so far out of this team. I've seen them in person a couple times. I think I've seen four games so far this season in person at Davenport. And then just what I'm seeing from the road games, the bits and pieces I've seen of the road games the last couple weekends, could be a good team this year. Pitching is good again, and the lineup's good. So we'll talk some more baseball as the season goes on. Still, like I said, early to get a feel for that. You know, where this team will be, but it's expected to do very well in the ACC, and I think the first two weekends kind of bear that out. And so baseball has our attention again for me. Hopefully, folks, if you're listening to this podcast, I appreciate you doing so, and I would love it if you tuned into some ESPN3 games that we do with VMI. If you follow us on Augusta Free Press, the website, we'll of course, you know, let you know when those games start. I mean, if you follow me on Twitter or anything else, you're not going to not know when that's going to happen, because I will rest. I will not rest until you know that we're going to be on the air. And I know that a lot of folks don't watch college baseball. And if you do watch college baseball, you're not likely watching VMI baseball. You know, I mean, we're, you know, a couple levels down there. But, you know, I'm going to say this about VMI. I love the stuff I do at VMI. I love the athletes, the student athletes there, because, man, those kids – you know, they just like, I'm a UVA alum, you know, they have the challenging academic environment, they've got the challenging military training environment, and then they're athletes. And baseball players especially, you know, there's partial of best scholarships for baseball players at the D1 level. And so, you know, it's a labor of love for those guys. And those guys play well. This VMI team, you know, that I'm going to get ready to do a 10-game series for, boy, they gave Virginia all they could handle. Virginia played them in the – I think it was Virginia's home opener this year back in February. And VMI led most of that game. It was 6-2, I want to say, in the seventh inning. Virginia ends up winning that game. I want to say the final score was 9-7. But, you know, VMI plays well against those big teams like that. And they can pop the ball. They've got, you know, a lineup with some home run hitters. Pitching might be the weakness for VMI. I like their Friday night starter, Jack Winder, big kid from Richmond, 6'5 kid from Richmond, 90-mile-an-hour fastball. Good off-speed stuff. So, you know, they've got some elements there that can be interesting. And so, yeah, please, just tune. Even if you're just, for novelty's sake, you want to hear me either trip over my words or whatever. Hopefully you're rooting for me. Listen, tune into some of those VMI broadcasts that we do. And I'll, of course, if you follow me on Twitter, you keep up with us only here in Augusta Free Press, you'll know the times, you'll know the dates. We will beat you over the head with them to let you know that they're coming. So, And hopefully, if you listen to this, you're probably listening to this on Sunday morning or Sunday during the day. My job tonight was to talk you down, you know, make you feel a little bit better about things as far as the end of the basketball season goes. There are worse things in life. Hey, for me, okay, Friday night I was going to be doing something because a couple months ago, my wife and I bought tickets to the Florida Georgia Line concert at JPJ. It's next Friday night. We bought the tickets back in early to mid-January. And I bought them looking at the schedule saying, well, you know, I don't know where things are going to go, but that's the weekend of the Sweet 16. Maybe Virginia plays on Thursday night that week and I don't have to worry about it. If they play Friday, then I've got something to think about. Well, obviously, the East Regional is next Friday night, so I knew going into today, I'm rooting for Virginia. The fan in me is rooting for Virginia to win the game, and that means I'm giving up my Florida-Georgia Line tickets, but, you know, that would be taking one for the team in a good way, right? Well, we lost the game. It's a consolation for me. I get to go to a great concert. I love Florida-Georgia Line. We saw them at JPJ. I want to say it was probably 2 years ago. One of the better concerts I've been to in my life. It's going to be a good one again coming up next week. So, you know, there is life after your basketball team loses. I'm just kind of saying that as our concluding remarks tonight. There is life after your basketball team loses. There's worse things. You got a lot. It's springtime in Virginia coming up. If you live in Virginia, springtime wherever you are, I'm sure. Unless you're on the, I guess, Southern Hemisphere listening in. If you are, thank you. You're getting ready for fall. So there's worse things than that, too. Changing of the leaves, whatever happens down south of the equator, whatever. There's so much going on in the world. Your basketball team losing a game is the least of your worries, I would hope. So perspective is what I was trying to give you here tonight, tomorrow, whenever you're listening to this. Hopefully I've done so. And that will wrap us up. And that doesn't mean that this is an end at all to Street Knowledge with Chris Graham. I got so much to talk about. But for tonight, that will conclude us. I want to thank you for listening and please have a great night, everybody.